If you don't like the number for economic growth, then re-engineer it. From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. The news this morning is that the U.S. economy never did shrink during the winter, as statisticians had told us. There's been a revision upward, and the government now says, no, the economy didn't shrink. It grew slightly. And by spring, into the first days of summer, it was growing at an annual rate of 2.3%. Our Thursday regular, Diane Swonk, is an expert in these matters, as we're about to hear. She's chief economist at Mesirow Financial in Chicago. Good morning.
Good to be here.
It's like the movie The Matrix. They tell you the economy's shrinking. We believe it for several months. Now the statisticians say, sorry, no, actually it grew. What do you make of this?
You know, the important thing is statisticians, and I spent a lot of time with them, and they tried to do their best, but they don't always get it right. We have this problem in the first quarter that we've been seeing really a lot lately, and that is we fall short, and they're trying to get the seasonal adjustment right. So when we have winter, we don't just contract because we have winter. We want to get it right. Is it more than seasonal losses that we're experiencing? And the cliff we've fallen off of in the last 2 years, they have tempered those losses now. Still not spectacular growth, but they're trying to give the most honest portrayal they can of the U.S. economy, which is really important when you're trying to set policy off the U.S. economy. You don't want to get a head fake just because the data is not seasonally adjusted accurately. It seems kind of arcane, but it's really important when you're looking at quarter-to-quarter growth and trying to assess what your next move would be, especially if you're Federal Reserve. You don't want to all of a sudden step off a cliff and raise rates if the economy just fell off a cliff.
Now, help us with the freshest quarter that they're reporting, second quarter, 2.3%. What does that say to you about where we are?
Well, it kind of says we're kind of where we have been. The fourth quarter growth is 2.3%, or at 2.3% in the current quarter. We did reaccelerate after that sluggish first quarter, even after whatever we found in terms of information out there. Consumers really were the driver's seat here. We saw consumers spend a lot of money on vehicles, and we also saw state and local government spending come back after a first quarter dip, and that's where we had seen a lot of draconian cuts earlier in the cycle. Finally, the housing market continues to heal, and the trade situation, which had been messed up by port strikes out in the West Coast, did get a little better. Exports were growing a little bit after contracting. Not our best strong point out there, but overall economy kind of looks back on track again.
All right, Diane Swonk at Mesirow Financial. Thank you for this.
Thank you.
Now to Egypt and a look at one piece of that country's crucial tourism industry. In 2011, when Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak was driven from office, and again in 2013 during the crackdown that followed Mohamed Morsi's ouster, tourists stopped coming to Egypt. Now visitors are returning, and the Egyptian government is working to prop up the handicraft makers that create the souvenirs that travelers like to bring back. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams visited some of these makers.
Away from the bright lights and hawkers of the central market, the winding back alleys of Khan al-Khalili are where the real work gets done. 41-year-old Mohamed El-Yamani's hands are stained black from decades of polishing intricately cast bronze lamps and grills.
The majority of them used to be made in workshops around here. They provided the livelihood to many people. Now China makes them for cheaper.
Many manufacturers went out of business after the revolution, and those that remained suddenly found their prices undercut by Chinese goods. So this year, the Egyptian government banned imports of traditional tourist items. The move was welcomed by Egyptians, even those who sell the imports, like shopkeeper Omar Azouz.
As long as imports are allowed, I would never manufacture. Something imported is cheaper. Why would I buy local, more expensive products?
Azouz tells me about half of the statues of pharaohs, tea sets, and other knickknacks in his shop are Chinese. Locals estimate suppliers still have enough in stock to keep markets flooded with made-in-China tourist items for quite some time. Azouz says he looks forward to when those run out.
You would be forced to buy an Egyptian product. Tourists will buy it even if it's more expensive.
Neither the Chinese-Egyptian Chamber of Commerce or the Chinese Embassy in Cairo were available to comment. But information from the Chinese Ministry of Commerce shows exports to Egypt decreased 15% the month the ban was announced, although there's no explanation listed for the drop. Back in his cramped Hanna Khalili workshop, Mohammed El Yamani looks forward to the day his products will only be competing on quality, not massive price differences.
Our work has a special style. If China makes this, I swear it won't be sold.
At least, not legally. I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
And the Associated Press went to Brazil to test the water where some athletes will swim during next year's Olympic Games. The tests found the water contaminated with sewage, lots of human waste with what the AP calls dangerously high levels of viruses and bacteria. The officials in Brazil had been pledging to clean this up. The AP reports the water from the three Olympic venues it tested was not just unsafe by international standards for swimming, but even for boating. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.